Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ken Hudson Show. Ken has investigated the strange and unusual for over two decades. He's led ghost tours, and he's accessed the most haunted places in the Southwest. He's the author of some 40 books of the paranormal, unusual, hidden treasure, conspiracies, and the downright strange. His personal experiences and the experiences of many others are related on this show and in his many books. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy as Ken takes us through tales of terror, trauma, and triumph. And now, your host, Mr. Ken.
And good evening. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show right here on the one and only Blog Talk Radio, coming to you live from our studio, temporary studio in New York City. We are broadcasting from the 10th floor of the Marcel Hotel. And it's quite an interesting view we have, looking down on the lower building. Well, tonight I'm going to talk about a number of things that took place today. You know, I'm in New York City. There was a... we were supposed to fly in and fly out. But then this trip was arranged and taken care of long ago. And now I've had to switch to driving because I have to... accomplish some familial duties, which will delay my return for a few days. But if you've ever wanted to, if you like to read and you like books, I saw every type of book you could ever imagine today. The Book Expo of America is two football fields of booths, every publishing company you could ever imagine, every author you've probably ever heard of. And they're all eager to give you copies of their books. And especially someone who does a radio show who can advertise these books. And speaking of advertising, this hour is brought to you by Marcello's Ristorante Italiano. Now, there are two in El Paso. One's on Lee Trevino, and one is on Mesa at the corner of Mesa and Festival. And we have, if you've ever wanted to try outstanding Italian food, Marcello's is the place you need to go. And you need to tell him you heard about it on the Ken Hudnall Show. Now, when I return next week, and we do some changes to the site, and we do some changes to the show, I'll be giving away dinner for two periodically to Marcello's. For those who call in and you know, the usual type of contest, those that answer questions or those that happen to call at the right time simply because I haven't given anything away recently. But you will find that Marcello's is a unique institution there in El Paso. And it will soon become your favorite, as it has many other people. Now, let's talk for a moment about you know, the writing business, if you will. Now, keep in mind, it very definitely is a business. Some become multimillionaires doing it, and some try forever to get their books published. And I seem to have lost Astro Intuitive, who's one of our mainstays. Now, if you want to call in and be involved in the conversation, You pick up that phone, you call 915-219-4210 if you're in the El Paso area. Toll free if any place in the continental United States, 866-929-2155 or 347-857-2680. Any of those numbers will get you on the show. Now, last night, if you were listening to the show, you heard me interview Mary Higgins Clark, who's probably one of the most famous authors in the country, as well as her daughter, Carol Higgins Clark, who's running her a close second. They write very good murder mysteries. As Mary Higgins Clark said in her interview, she likes to go for suspense. And Carol's a little more... she adds humor to her story. Heidi, there's a message for you on the in the chat room. If you could answer that, I'm trying to find out if my signal at this particular location is good enough for the listeners. And, however, each one has written quite a number of New York Times best-selling books. Now, tomorrow I'll have a long list of interviews that I'll be doing, and I will bring most of those interviews to the listening audience. I'm going to pre-record some. Others I will try to do right there. At the on the show, but this is the opportunity for you all to have the opportunity to interact with people you would never be able to probably talk with. Simply because most Astro Intuitive has no audio. Well, if I could get Heidi to respond, I could find out if she has any audio. I don't know what the problem is and why she's not responding. Oh, okay, she can hear me. All right, so it's that was yeah, this is a different Wi-Fi that I was using last night. Unfortunately, the Friars Club has a very large party going on tonight. Ted Ferrone, who was going to be with me again, is actually at the screening of Sex and the City 2, which he will probably be discussing tomorrow evening when he does his segment on movie viewing. Now, one of the good things about being able to meet such a varied selection of authors is some of the more interesting books that don't make the major bookstores are available here. Two or three investigative reporting books regarding the current administration are available. They go into some details that... most of the liberal media doesn't really want to get out there. I keep losing Astro Intuitive. Not too bad. Now, third hour tonight, I'll have Belinda Womack, who is a psychic. She'll be doing some readings. We'll be talking about her book. But for the first 2 hours, I'm going to talk about some of the things I came across as... I came on this interesting trip. Now, the original format of this show was Unsolved Mysteries, Lost Treasures, and Ghosts, which has been expanded into so many different areas. But, and the reason for that, of course, is people are drawn to the unusual. But even in our ordinary humdrum lives, we're inundated with very odd things. Most people, of course, go through their day and they don't pay any attention to anything. I mean, unless it directly struck them, a piano could fall right behind them and they probably wouldn't pay any attention, especially here in New York City, where most people refuse to make eye contact. Now, as we came further up the coast, we stopped off in Atlantic City because I was trying to do some research for a book about occult mysteries and spirits there, and found that, according to the locals, there are no mysteries in that region. However, according to the employees of the hotel that we stayed in, there are very definitely tales of the strange and unusual in some of the casinos. It's just they are forbidden to discuss them. If they do discuss them, they can lose their job. There's one particular story about a lady who... in all likelihood, it was suicide, but she died while staying at the hotel. And now she haunts the hotel. In fact, she was one of these individuals who is very particular about how things were supposed to be done, and at least in her room. And she will move things if she doesn't like what a guest does, because quite often in some of the rooms, of course, you rearrange the furniture to suit your own taste. People rearrange the furniture, they go out, they come back, and the furniture is back where it was when they arrived. And then, of course, I talked about the fire that was caused by tunnels dug underneath the building by homeless who created their own little den. And after the fire, when the police discovered the impromptu cave, they also discovered a mummified body that had been there, they suspect, close to a year. The homeless were sleeping around it. Now, I don't know about you, but even homeless, I'd find someplace else to sleep besides cuddling up to a mummy. You know, everybody has their own ways of doing things. Well, let's talk for a minute about the plans for the show, because I do want to make you aware of the fact we'll be changing a number of things. Number one, the calendar will be much more prominent, and we'll be scheduling some more tours. There have been quite a number of requests for me to do additional tours. I've done Emporia Cemetery. I've done downtown. I've been asked to go out to the Blue Reservation to do a tour there. There are quite a number of stories about hauntings there. And it's a part of the city. I haven't investigated much, but definitely we will be delving into that. In fact, there's cameras from when it was an active casino. Picked up quite a few unusual happenings. And those unusual happenings have... certainly gained a bit of notoriety. And it's, as was pointed out, I should have gone out there long since to write about that. I just have not had the opportunity. So we'll be doing ghost tours out in that area. Then we'll also be doing another investigation of a sarco I don't have a specific date on that. This time there will be video made available through the website, also through El Paso Alternate Reality Project's website. We're going to be much more interactive. Additionally, we're going to be making moving more into electronic versions of my books, so that if you decide to purchase them, you can just download them. The Kindle has three. We're getting ready to do a number of them for Sony. And Google approached me today at the BEA, so I'll be having discussions with them tomorrow. Who knows? It may wind up there as well. But we're going to be much more aggressive in marketing, which a number of people have criticized me for not doing that on the show. Now, let's look at some of the other things that I discovered on the way up. We stopped off in Vicksburg for gas, and of course, anything to do with the Civil War, I find fascinating. And it turns out that the battlefield is haunted. Now, we didn't get the opportunity to do the entire tour, because that would have taken almost 2 hours. And, you know, the 2,500-mile drive to begin with, so I didn't really want to add 2 hours to it. And there were a number of books that were available. There were a lot of strange tales coming out of the Civil War. And only now are some of them actually gaining a large amount of notoriety. There are not a great number of the books out, but at every battlefield you'll find one or two. And some of the coincidences that came out of the war were things that, if it happened to you, you would swear that it was just absolutely bizarre. There was one particular engagement where the two generals, the southern and the northern generals, aggressively sought each other, but unfortunately, for both probably, they were not successful in defeating each other. They literally fought to a draw. After the war, there was an unveiling of a monument, and two old soldiers happened to strike up a conversation while viewing the. They'd done a cyclorama, one of the big models of the battlefield, which showed the layout of the troops. And you know, cycloramas were very popular at one time. I know it in a town I grew up in. Every year there would be one brought in, and the turnout was just phenomenal. People loved it. And these two old soldiers spent, you know, quite a bit of time in each other's company discussing, you know, the war, and each one told about the adventures that they had. And one of them made the comment that during the engagement, there was an attempt to eliminate the general from the side, but he spent his time hiding. And the Union veteran said, well, there were people in his unit that were specifically targeting the Confederate general, but they couldn't find him. And then when they, after spending the day in each other's company, and they had never gotten around to introducing each other, it turns out that they were the two generals in question. And it took the war ending and both of them just becoming nostalgic about the same time and doing travels to the places that they had been during the war. There's no something like that's just absolutely bizarre. Now, if you've ever read my book, Military Ghost, on the cover is a very unusual picture. And that picture was taken at Gettysburg. And it shows two glowing figures with their rifle over their right shoulders marching across the battlefield. That was not a reenactment. That was a photograph taken of the battlefield at dusk, and only later did those figures show up. But at Gettysburg, there's been quite a number of very strange things photographed on the field. And there's no question in the minds of many that the dead do not rest easily at many of the battlefields. I know Stones River, which was quite a violent battle. In fact, it was almost a draw. But armies fought it until exhaustion set in. Those who go out there at night, because even today you can find quite a number of relics that will occasionally be uncovered by weather. But a number of individuals who have spent time in the evening, which is illegal, by the way, have reported being chased off the battlefield by something. No one is really certain what that something is, but it's big, and it gives chase whenever it finds someone on the battlefield, but only after dark. Growing up, I used to hear some of the older guys talk about it because that was a good way to supplement your income. Going onto the battlefield and finding relics that in those days would be sold at pawn shops. Today you put them on eBay. But it was quite a unique opportunity because Civil War relics bring very, very good prices, so of course there are always people going out there. And some of them left a whole lot faster than they went. By the time I was old enough to really get out there and start looking, I, of course, had my family had moved, so I never had the opportunity to meet whatever it was. Several of the battlefields are haunted by strange creatures. Chickamauga, which is on the Georgia side of the Georgia-Tennessee border, has been a battlefield since some of the early tribes fought for their hunting grounds. But there is a large creature with glowing red eyes that has chased people off the battlefield there. And it there's a tower on the battlefield. If you've ever had the opportunity to wander around that field, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. That tower has been the center of activities for God. Chickamauga was in late 1863, so it's about 150 years. There have been strange goings on that before. But, and it's not only in there's also a number of odd activities on battlefields in the Southwest. And if you've never had the opportunity to go wandering around some of the battlefields, you need to take it. There were battlefields as far to the west as Arizona. There were even some down along the Mexican border. And speaking of the Mexican border, there is an alert right now regarding Somali terrorists that are supposedly sneaking in through Mexico. While the federal government has put out an alert, they also will not do anything to try to assist in dealing with water problems. And another thing that's been interesting is I've traveled. I've listened to people talking about the Arizona law, and it looks like about 55% seem to be in favor of it. Of course, the federal government is not. The Attorney General is making sounds of that he's going to prosecute for civil rights violations. The interesting thing is, in the next breath, both he and Napolitano have admitted they haven't bothered to read the law. They're just assuming that the law violates civil rights. But unfortunately, they won't do anything to assist those in the Southwest that actually beg for help. But that's an entirely different story right now. The big news, of course, is the oil spill, which it's not come as far north as we have traveled, but there are rumors that if it cannot be capped off, it will come all the way up the eastern seaboard, and it's already gotten into the Gulf. So I suspect we'll see it on the Texas shores very shortly, which is too bad, because the death and destruction to the animal population is getting worse, and unfortunately there's nothing the animal can do about it, and there's nothing that we're actually doing about it. BP is being told to clean up their own mess, and that has not been, shall we say, the greatest idea that our government has ever had. Now, if anyone has questions or comments, I invite you to send a text. We are, the chat room is working beautifully. And all you've got to do is, if you want to call in, 915-219-4210. Toll free from any place in the continental United States, 866-229-2155 or 347-857-2680. And that number is most useful in the Northeast, our Canadian listeners. That's a good number for them. But whatever number you want to use, we'll get you on the show, and we can have some great discussions. Now, one of the interesting things that I've read a lot about over the last few days are some of the, and we talk about people having premonitions. During the Civil War, quite often soldiers will get premonitions that this battle would be their last. And quite often that proved to be the case. Now, you have to ask yourself, are those premonitions self-fulfilled prophecies? Did they do something that allowed them to become casualties? Now, there was one individual who was a substitute, which meant he had accepted money to serve in someone's place, which was something was done quite often during the Civil War. If you were a wealthy individual and your number came up, all you had to do was find somebody to take your place, and as far as the government was concerned, that was fine. Well, this particular substitute was an individual of great accomplishments, at least according to him. He said he was a lawyer and a veteran of the campaign in Western Tennessee quite often in those days, especially during the early years of the Civil War. Those who entered service did so for a year because neither were expected to last more than a year. So he claimed that he was a veteran of the campaign in Western Tennessee. He had got out, and the opportunity to make some good money as a substitute came up, and he went back into service. And as a veteran, at least according to him, there were benefits available. But in this particular case, it became rather clear that he wasn't quite the veteran he made himself out to be. A lot of things he should have known seemed to be a mystery. And that type of gap in knowledge could be, shall we say, somewhat life-threatening. But on one particular day, he was having a dinner with his fellow soldiers, and he said very shortly he was not going to be, he was going to die. He was going to be killed in battle. And of course, they thought he was basically running his mouth because he had the tendency to do that. Now, this was 1864, and the Army of the Potomac was going to try once again to take Richmond. Now, of course, they had to deal with Robert E. Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia, and this began the campaign known as the Wilderness, because they had to cross an area on the way to Richmond that was one of the most dense wildernesses in that particular part of Virginia. And the regiment that he was a part of moved through the wilderness, and the Confederates sprang their trap. The fighting was vicious. But his particular unit had the job of building breastworks, because they repulsed the first Confederate attack, but they knew there would be another one. So they built the breastworks, and the individual in question, his name was Schulter, actually, was right in there with his cohorts working to wreck this line of breastworks. The battle began shortly. Both sides fought for that stretch of ground to the point that bodies literally littered the ground from one end of the line to the other. The children were still alive. So clearly he was somewhat mistaken, everyone assumed. And then close to the end of the day, one last shot was heard. But no one knew where it came from. No one saw the effect. But the effect was felt, because Schulter was found dead, having been shot right between the eyes. Now, wasn't it only enlisted men who had such premonitions? Often officers did. And in addition to officers, a lot of those, what we look at as administrative positions today, Actually, we're heavily involved in combat during the Civil War years. First sergeants, who normally hold administrative posts for the most part, in this particular instance, were right in there with the soldiers. In fact, they held the they helped the officers keep the line pretty much intact. And on this particular day, the first sergeant, who was known as extremely energetic, a first-class soldier, went to his commander and said, "I'm not going to survive." He asked to be relieved from duty for that day. And the commander said, "Well, I'm not doing it, because if I relieve you for a feeling, how can I not relieve the next person who has a feeling?" So the battle was engaged. The first sergeant was seen gallantly leading his men across the open area, attacking the Confederate positions. After the battle, he was found dead. Many individuals who take part in such activities become rather superstitious. In fact, soldiers are some of the most superstitious people. And when they get a feeling, the question becomes, are they ask the question, are they really feelings, or is there a little bit of trepidation? Because we're looking at a war that had unbelievable casualties. You know, families were split up. And of course, even more importantly than that, you had people going into areas, for example, Chickamauga, perfect example. It was such a desolate area that the just the being in the area intimidated a lot of soldiers on both sides. It was an area that had, as I said earlier, a reputation for the unusual long before the engagement at Chickamauga took place. In fact, the battle took place almost as an accident. And had it not been for an error on the part of one of the Confederate commanders, that would have been the end of the Army, of the Union Army of the Tennessee. General Thomas, as a fluke, happened to be in the right place at the right time. We've got California Living back with us. So it's nice you could join us. This show is coming to you from Temporary Studios in New York City. Heidi's cooking again. Here it's almost 9 o'clock. So folks are having late coffee. Most folks have already eaten, but and since New York City is a place where most people do a whole lot of walking, let's see, moving the bell peppers into the pot and slipped up and they went into the sink. Now, you can't admit to folks that you've got pot, because you'll have the narcs at your door just any time. Texas doesn't have the laws regarding medicinal marijuana. So I just want to point that out to you there, Heidi. Now, we, third hour, we're going to have a psychic, Linda Womack. So if you want to get a reading, got to wait till the third hour. But she's not going to be talking about the book that she's written. Now, if we got any questions, of course, you pick up that phone. You call 915-219-4210. The heat will kill the germs. Well, if you go by the hospital 5-second rule, if it was on the floor or in the sink for no more than 5 seconds, just put it back in and keep going. Now, we have another story of a premonition of death. This was a Union colonel. 3-second rule, pick them up. Go for it. And here is a 5-second rule. They were already cooked. Well, so whatever got on them in the sinks, just a little more flavoring. Don't worry about it. Go for it. I see Chaska has joined us from Peru. It's nice you all could be with me. When you think about the difference between New York City and Peru, it couldn't be much different. Though I'll have to admit, we appear to have some pyramids here. And there are people who look at you strangely, as the natives do in South America. But we had a Union colonel. I used to, yes, I'm on location. I'm located right by a window. That's why you can hear me so well. Yeah, Heidi, go ahead and eat the peppers, and if something happens, just make sure that you you have the opportunity to send your message over the chat room if there's a problem. Now, this particular Union colonel was one of those who was somewhat flamboyant. Whenever he was in combat, he would wear a red handkerchief around his head. And in one day, he was noticed to that he was wearing his red handkerchief. They were getting ready to go into combat in one of the major battles there north of Richmond. The guy spilled a peck of red hot peppers. Well, certainly that could happen. And on this particular day, he was wearing a black handkerchief around his head. And he was asked for the reason for the change in his normal garb. He said this was the battle in which he would fall. Now, there are those who, of course, anybody who has been on the battlefield, those that happen in any engagement. But for some reason, this particular individual never had the slightest thought that something would happen to him until this particular battle. And when the battle was over, he rolled up to his executive officer, made a comment about the now you have to ask yourself, what gives someone the idea that it's his time? And more importantly, what gives the individual in question the idea that it may be his time? We've never been able to, and when I was in, I had people who would come up to me and inform me that they were going to have a problem. Let's see, you live in Vegas, right, Heidi? It will stay here. No audio. I have plenty of audio. I got all kinds of audio. And Heidi wishes she lived in Vegas. She'd probably have a job. Well, actually, there's a lot of people in Vegas who are looking for jobs. And the casinos are laying off. And in a few minutes, I'm going to be telling some of the interesting stories that have come to light in my research about some of the odd things going on in Vegas. Now, there were, though it's not really well known, there were actually Civil War battles in Nevada. And, of course, you have a number of, I guess you would call them, coincidences about various things happening in Vegas or in Nevada. So the gold and silver mines were quite productive in the Civil War era, and the North needed the gold and silver. The South wanted it. So quite a number of battles. Reverend Owen Will lives in Ohio. Well, I'm glad you could join us. The show is coming to you tonight from New York City, and we are talking about various things that I've come upon in the 2,500-mile trip from El Paso. Now, when you come to a city like New York, which is a very old city, there are a lot of unusual occurrences come to light. For example, beneath this city are three or four levels of tunnels, and you have families that live in those tunnels. Sometimes they've been there for two generations. Beneath the Waldorf Astoria is it used to be an elevator. I'm told the elevator is now sealed off, but there's two ways to get to it. You can go down to private subway stations that belong to Rockefellers and Vanderbilts, and they're still there. And they were like, it was like going into museums. I mean, it was artwork on the wall. Not mole people per se. However, what you did have were a number of families who became homeless and found some of these underground facilities that were better than anything they could afford above ground. And they literally just moved in and set up housekeeping. And as her children came along, they stayed. Some of them come above ground during the day and can go back down into the tunnels at night. And even the subway system, the active tunnels that lead you to passages that go down beneath the city. When I was living here in the early 90s, there was a story that made the rounds that in the main library there was a picture of it was a full length picture of Christ, and if you knew the secret, it would swing away from the wall of the staircase. It would take you the underground tunnels. Now, many who tried to get in to explore. In New York City, there's something called an urban scavenger. And they go looking for some of the hidden locations. And there was, when there were attempts to get on the underground tunnels by way of that picture, and the only thing damaged was the area around that picture. The picture was removed, and according to the story, the repeat about the Christ photo. Okay, there was in the main library a full-size picture of Christ that hung on the wall. It was a massive picture, very heavy. is anyone else having trouble hearing me? Because according to my what I have to look at here, audio should be fine. But let me see if I can turn it up any. Let's try that. Is that any better? Well, according to the story behind that picture, if you knew where the switch was that allowed you to open it, it would swing out like a door, and there was a hidden staircase that would take you down to some of the underground tunnels. Well, of course, when a story like that began to spread, a lot of the urban explorers wanted, of course, to go into that area. So they would be found by library staff trying to get the picture open. And then one night there was a fire that only affected the area around the picture. So when the renovation work was done, the picture was gone, and that wall, that area was now a solid wall. The islanders ran out of tunnels. Well, you also have to remember that when the subway system was built, there were multiple levels. And some of the older levels are very deep and were only used for a short time. Yes, quite a number of tunnels along the southern border. But beneath El Paso is 900 miles of tunnels. And you, if you know where it took and which tunnel to take, you could go underneath the Rio Grande into Juarez. In fact, I wrote about that in some of my books. You might find... in fact, shortly you'll find some of those books available for Kindle or for the Sony ebook and for the Nook, which is the one from Barnes & Noble. Now, several hundred, somewhere between 60 and 100 feet beneath the city streets, beneath the Waldorf Astoria, there is, as I was earlier, they had a private station where their personal subway car would be waiting. And because they, you know, being the wealthy, they didn't want to rub elbows with the common man, so they would go down to their own private subway station. And when they quit using it, instead of dismantling everything, they just shut doors. The Irish did, and so did the Asian. Well, that's true. A lot of the tunnels in El Paso were built by the largest smuggling ring of Chinese immigrants in the world was based in El Paso and Juarez. And when the, I remember back in the late 1800s, Chinese Exclusion Acts, which said that Chinese could not immigrate to the country. The dream of everyone had been to come here, earn a living, and be able to bring over their intended and start a new life here in the country. Well, there were a lot of complaints that they were taking jobs away from citizens, so Congress finally gave in and passed the Chinese Exclusion Act. And what that did, of course, it had a grandfather clause which said if you were already here at the time the act passed, you could stay, but you couldn't come back. So they couldn't go back home and they couldn't get their intended, and they couldn't bring over other members of their family. So the people in El Paso and Juarez, they always when thing is out, started smuggling it into the country. And what they started doing was digging tunnels beneath the Rio Grande to bring the immigrants across. El Paso had a permanent Chinese community of about 700. About 25% worked full-time smuggling other Chinese into the country. And what they did was they would tunnel beneath the city, and a lot of houses, especially in Sunset Heights, had basements. They would dig into the basement, not break into the house, but they would dig in and build a room around the area just dug in through. And then what they would do now is these areas that they had put on with audio is not good. Not sure what the problem is because it's showing a good signal here. And Heidi confirmed my signal was good on the El Paso end, so I'm not sure what the problem is. Of course, in New York City, a lot of people use Wi-Fi, which of course affects the overall signal. But let me know. I've got everything cut off except when I'm on the show, so I've got the sound sucking left. Can you hear me now? Well, I'm not getting a response. That doesn't sound good. But what they would do is they would take people into your house, for example, through the tunnel that was built, and they would hide there until they could be smuggled further north. So I talked to a number of people who bought houses in Sunset Heights every three or four words and then nothing. I'm not sure what the problem is. I've got the signal strength, as I say, as high as it will go. Hopefully it will clear up. Last night I had phenomenal signal strength. Anyway, moving on to the story I was telling. You would have people living under your roof that you didn't know were there. And they were hiding from, even in the late 1800s, they were a operation. Their idea of a border fence was stringing barbed wire, which probably would be more effective than what we've got today. But anyway, some people came on my tours who had just bought a house in Sunset Heights, and what they did is they brought in workers to, they wanted to expand the basement. And they were going to knock out a wall and move it out, move the wall out a little bit. And when they knocked down one wall that they thought was solid brick, it just fell. And what they had was a hidden room. They found some mattresses. They found some newspapers from the 1800s. They found some old clothes. All that done, they found three hidden rooms that no one had ever known were there. You will find surprising, I guess you could say. We've lost California Living again. And I'm sorry for any problems there may be with the signal. I've got the best signal that's available here. Tomorrow night I'll be doing a show from this location. Friday night there will not be a show. I'll be playing some pre-recorded shows because I'll be on the road again. And then Monday night, I won't be doing a show because, of course, it is a holiday. And I'm going to try to get it, make as much. Did you have cell phone near your setup? Yes, I have cell phone with an excellent signal. So the, you know, it's not a signal problem. I think is just a problem with the band spread, the bandwidth. Because I'm right in the middle of Manhattan, which if you've ever been to Manhattan, right now the temperature, even at this hour of the night, is because it is 9 o'clock here. But the temperature is in the high 70s. It has been like taking a bath walking down the street in this town. Now, continuing on, you know, there's a lot of mysteries in not only El Paso, but in most of the major older cities in this town, in this country. New York City has more mysteries than they really know what to do with. Quite often they will find bodies that are 50 or 100 years old, a server maybe. Well, I'm using the hotel Wi-Fi, so the server is not at this location. The server could be the problem, but if it's working well part of the time and then there's an occasional hiccup, I think what you're looking at there is probably a bandwidth problem. Now, we've got, and also remember, routinely we have an excess of 3 million listeners scattered around the world. So a lot of people come in through the website, and while they don't sign in, when they come in through the website, that does have a drawdown effect on the broadband as well. But all we can do is just continue to march and see what happens. Now, if you've never been to New York, you will find that there's a lot of lost and hidden treasure here. There's a lot of lost and hidden treasure in El Paso. In fact, there is more lost and hidden treasure buried in this country than is in circulation. We also need to keep in mind that a lot of people that went through the Depression back in the 20s and 30s don't trust banks. So when they die, they may appear to have nothing when in actuality hidden around their property could be a veritable fortune. There's a gentleman I know who is, I know he's quite well off because I know where he lives, and yet he operates a bulldozer for a construction company. And if he wanted to, he could retire and never do anything. But the reason he operates the bulldozer for the construction company is the bulldozer operator quite often the first one to see hidden valuables. And of course, when they see the hidden valuables, as he put it, no one else does. There's a number of, in fact, we've talked a number of times about the cavern off of Murchison in El Paso that's the size of Carlsbad, and the city refuses to open it up for whatever reason, but the point is that it was accidentally broken into by a bulldozer operator back in the 80s. And I ran into him, got a chance to talk to him about it. And he said that they sent a man down on a rope, and whatever he saw when he came out cause the supervisor on the job to order it sealed up, and they've never agreed to reopen it. Now, there are those that say that that area is where they have the Lost Padre mine hidden. Now, I've talked to some people who've gone into that, different parts of the that area, and they found something. They never would say what it was they found, but they certainly found something. Now, Lost Treasure has been, I've known people during the various recessions who couldn't get work and have supported their families treasure hunting. When I used to live in California, I went to the beach every morning because at 5 and 6 in the morning, there's nobody else on the beach. It was a very nice place. Well, I noticed a bunch of older gentlemen started showing up every morning, and we struck up a conversation, and they were all retired executives from various companies, and they had moved to California. And every morning they're out there on the beach with metal detectors, and I said, are y'all really finding anything, or is this your way of just getting out of the house? And they said, oh no. In fact, one of them said that he had been retired for 8 years and never had to touch his retirement. He and his wife lived on what he found with his metal detector. Gold nuggets, no, but a hell of a lot of coins found in the sand on the beach. There was a gentleman who worked for Con Ed, which is the New York City power company. He moved to... he retired, and he and his wife bought a Winnebago, a travel motorhome. And as a joke, his kids gave him a metal detector because he was always saying that when he retired, he was going to walk, take the weight off. And he was in Utah at an old rodeo ring. Just wandering around the metal detector. And he found a coin a little bit bigger than a silver dollar. It turned out to be back in the Gold Rush era, there were a lot of private mints who made, there was very little, change in existence. And the coin that he found, there were only 4 others like it still in existence. And the estimated value of the coin was 6 figures. So it's another individual who probably never had to touch his retirement. There are those, when I was in the military, there was a boat company located near where I was stationed, and I got to know the guys who were involved with that company, and I came across some of them sitting in the water up to their waist, and they had window screens off the barracks. Hello, Juice Football, how you doing? And they were taking scoops of sand off the bottom and dumping into the window screens. And I asked one of them, what exactly was it they were doing using the window screens off the barracks? And they took me up to their room, and they showed me a cigar box. And a cigar box was literally crammed full of pieces of 8 and a lot of Spanish coins. Heidi's still my co-host. She is a call screener and co-host, yes. She is, the last I knew, she was trying to get peppers out of her sink, and I urged her to obey the hospital 5-second rule that if something jumped out of the pot and was no more than 5 seconds before you got it back in, you could go ahead and eat it. Now, I don't know if that's what she did or not. She was cooking dinner. I'm sitting in New York City at the moment, where it's about in the high 70s, low 80s. Oh, don't worry about interrupting. And Mr. Hudnall's my father. I go by Ken, or your lordship, or, you know, anything along those lines. You have information for her? Well, go ahead and give it to her. She's out there somewhere. Now, there are those. Last I was on, that's true. I spent a week in Las Vegas. I came up here. I was supposed to fly into New York City and then fly back out, but now I'm visiting my father, which meant I had to drive 2,500 miles almost exactly. So we'll be leaving here Friday or Saturday and driving back. Now, which means we get to stop at all those strange little places you never get a chance to stop on. Some gold veins in the hills of California have been touched by 1%. Well, that's quite true. In fact, a lot of the mines that produced gold and silver as far back as the Spanish days still have mineable ore. And if you know where to dig, you can do quite well. Some of the silver mines out of Nevada, it wouldn't pay a company to go in there and spend a lot of money, but it would pay a couple of folks to go in there, and especially the area they call the mine tailings, which is all the rock and what have you've dug out of the mine. It's normally piled outside the entrance. If you check that, when gold was $35 an ounce, it didn't really pay to deal with the tailings, but now when gold is, the last price I saw was $1,400 an ounce, you can certainly do quite well. And there are people who, and I don't know if this is a good idea or not, the beauty of reopening some of the mines, especially in this economy, is the amount of money you make is dependent on how much effort you want to put in. There's been a couple of questions about whether or not the idiots, the hackers, are with us. A few weeks ago, BDR canceled four or five shows that seemed to be the core of the hacking group, and that took the wind out of their sails, though I understand there's some other groups. You know, what these people call pranking is actually a violation of federal law regarding interference with communications. And, you know, one individual who took great delight in doing it to my show and dared me to do something about it was a young man who was, he had received a 4-year scholarship, any college he wanted to go to, from the military. I mean, he did have phenomenal computer talents, but he just used them for the wrong thing. He lost his scholarship, and he is facing criminal prosecution under the Patriot Act. Now, this is not treated lightly by anybody. I was asked if I would let bygones be bygones with this young man, and I said, not just no, but hell no. So, get caught, keep them down.
Now, Spark Chaser said some gold veins in the hills of California will not be touched by 1%. Quite true, and some of the very old Spanish mines that the Spaniards were forced out, and they covered them up. When the Jesuits were chased out of California, out the New World by the King of Spain, they closed a lot of the mines that they were working. And in fact, any ore that they had available that they couldn't take with them, they hid in the mines. So finding one or two of those will definitely give you a good payday. Now, if anybody wants to call in and be involved in the show, 915. Hacker, need to stop all hacking, Blog Talk Show. Well, for some reason, they seem to think it's fun and exciting to prove that they have the ability to hack into shows. I've had them hack into Blog Talk itself and try to take over my show, and once or twice they succeeded, but that left too much of a trail, and it was traced right back to my Blog Talk. I'm breaking up badly, hard to hear me. How about now? Is this any better? I think I've figured out what the problem may be, or at least part of the problem. I am sitting in the area where they have the computers that are available through the hotel. And they also use broadband. One of the computers has a problem, and it seems to bounce on and off, so that may be part of the issue. Am I going to do a ghost tour soon? Yes. I had one contact me on this and asked me if I do a special ghost tour for this one. Theoretically, a week from Saturday, I'm doing more and more active ghost tours. Will be Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that. As I said, there seems to be a line of sight issue regarding the broadband and the Wi-Fi, and I've got a number of extremely tall buildings around where I'm sitting, so that may be the reason that the signal is good one moment and bad the next. But we will continue on. And if anybody's got any questions, of course, ask them through the chat room. Or if you want to call in, the numbers are still the same, 915-219-4210 in the El Paso region, 866-229-2155, any place in the continental United States, that's toll-free. Or for our friends in the Northeast and in Canada, 347-857-268. Zero. Perhaps having to restart my sound may have helped. I'm sorry it went down, but now that we've got it back up. Now, don't forget, third hour, I will have Belinda Womack, who is a psychic. She'll be doing readings for those who call in. Yoli is back with us on Monday nights, though I will not be doing a show Friday evening or Monday evening. There'll be pre-recorded shows playing. Tuesday, I'll be back with a live show, and I'll also be back in my studio in El Paso. Now, you still on? I'm on Omega Television Network. I'm to just do the audio while I'm here. And we'll get PTN for a while, but one of their investors wanted my time slot for some friend of his. An organization that would do something like that. I was doing five nights a week. You know, I was doing my show on their system, and they wanted me to do just one night, and then it just became a problem. So I was offered my own television channel, which we'll be making more use of when I return. Now, show Friday night is I will be on Well, I got knocked off again, but I'm back. What do you think of the ghost hunting show on the Travel Channel with the idiot who wears tight shirts and threatens ghosts to beat him up? Well, actually, I think he's a bit of a bozo. I mean, a lot of these shows for the ego individual doing. Be that serious about them. The ones that we do, of course, we try to be as serious as we can. Have I seen it? No, I haven't. Because when these shows are on, I'm normally on the air doing my own show. They're stupid. Well, yeah, I'd agree with that. Now, for some reason, I've lost the signal twice, but it comes back up. So, what would be an interesting show, but they would never show it, of course, is if something happens and his tight shirt and his threats doesn't have any effect on whatever it is that happens. Now, we will be doing later on in the summer, we'll be doing some videos from such places as Yuma Territorial Prison, and we'll be back in Phoenix for a couple of shows. We're going to be doing a lot of interesting locations. All right, I was talking about is the place I'm at haunted, ghost taking? No, as far as I know, now this building, which is now a hotel, was originally an old church. Certainly that's a possibility, but I'm not, I can't get any confirmation. I was told by everybody there were absolutely no spirits in Atlantic City, and the employees of the hotel told me about a couple. There were a couple of, at least one suicide at the hotel I was at, and that certainly had a, that created one. Most folks a sarco. You know, that put me into 6 feet of water. Wasn't too happy about that. But, of course, they got in the spirit. I think Bin Laden is hiding in there, in his nose, yes. Well, certainly that can happen. It looks like a cat. from a cave up in the Franklins. So we will be trying to do that if we can find the entrance. I'd like to go on your ghost tour sometime. It would be awesome. Ever come down to Florida? Actually, we are discussing going to Key West. But with the oil issue, I'm not sure it'd be too slick an operation to go to Key West right now. That's why they have the J-Dam. Be interesting. Now, most of the books are coming out, and will be covered quite a number. We're going to Wilmington, North Carolina soon. Anything interesting there to look for? I've got a file on North Carolina. I don't have it with me. When I get back, I will post a lot of those. In fact, you know, a lot of my stuff posted on the website. Go to West Palm Beach, Florida. I did some about 6 months in Treasure Island. Mother of all. Interesting. California and the ability to make money. In fact, years ago, when I was on the Army, camp, I guess. On the East Coast, and I was driving down the beach road and saw this big metal detector display in the window. Had to stop and get one, and paid for the trip. What's the scariest haunting I've ever had? Let's see. Actually, the thing that was the most disconcerting was when the floor disappeared out from underneath me at a Sarco. The phone lines are haunted. Well, funny you should say that. There's quite a number of stories involving voices on phone lines. We got or finish the negotiation for the national syndication, and hopefully I can get some more done on that tomorrow. If you've never been to the BEA, picture two football fields of authors and publishers, and the people are, it's almost wall-to-wall people. And the Javits Center is a huge place. And picture all those people and only a few bathrooms. You're missing half the show. Well, let me say this about that. I do apologize. Unfortunately, I'm at the mercy of the broadband. And doing a show like this does take a lot of assets, but last night the signal was phenomenal. Specifically for shows, and this system is not. So we could put the guy in a tight shirt on the roof, and maybe he could draw a bigger signal. Who knows? Now, when you go in looking for people look at them as amusements. And actually, if you approach it correctly, they can be patients. Every old city in El Paso's, you know, Phoenix is old, San Diego, the cities. Stories. And people are fascinated by the stories. You mean the man? one of the problems I'm having in El Paso is, after I did the research and put the stories together, people moved over. Yada, yada, yada. When it gets right down to it, all they know about the stories is what they read in my books. But people are so enthusiastic about, at least in the Southwest, about doing ghost tours and this and that and the other, that they listen to people what they're talking. A lot of effort and a lot of work went into finding all the stories that we've collected. And when you publish a book, it's appropriate them as their own. Now, we're also going to do all the things that we write about. For example, how to how to deal with ghosts, how to look for ghosts, how to get out of a house. They had to do an exorcism. And it was quite an interesting event. Now, the story, we found out about it, and of course put it out there for everybody to see and read about. Now, the... last night, if you were listening, we interviewed Mary Higgins Clark and Carol Higgins Clark, two of the foremost writers in the country. It was Mary Higgins Clark that really got me started doing things besides UFOs. And then, of course, several authors in El Paso. I gave me the emphasis to go. You have no idea until you go to something like the BEA. We probably have 100th writing population here, and yet it's thousands. Everybody has a book. Everybody comes here with their book, thinking to make the deal will make them unbelievably wealthy. I've been very lucky. I appreciate y'all. When you two of them out there, and they all are selling rather well, which is greatly appreciated. Now, we have coming up next on tomorrow evening. We were going to do some broadcasts from the BEA, but so many people are drawing against that broadband that the bandwidth is just not there to keep a steady signal, which is why I'm not doing shows directly from the hall. They were supposed to be doing some corrections today, so I might be able to do it tomorrow, but we will. People there, I would really like you all to be able to talk to. All right. Questions from Deborah. I can't spell tonight. Now, you were asking about something that I have. We haven't made it available yet. Rising from the audio, gotta go. Well, I apologize. We have done everything that we can do, and the unfortunate thing is that as more and more people get on the broadband here, it pulls it down, and that affects the ability to. To keep the signal. Seen anyone comment in. Neither have I. A lot of discussion in the chat room. I'm back. but I couldn't get enough signal strength to come back. Now, what I'm going to show around, I would say, New York City, I'm in Manhattan. The taller buildings, it's the band appears to be fluctuating. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and get okay, I'm back again. What I'm going to do is go ahead and get the third hour guest, and then we will have to show up a little early since we're having such problems with the broadband. Let's see. There we go. And it's difficult to dial it in the dark, but we're working at it. I'm not getting a I've got a good signal.
Extension 5054740115 is on the phone. Please leave your message after the tone. When done, hang up or press the pound key.
Well, that is not going to work. All right. Okay. Heidi has dropped out, so let me try again.
extension 50547 0015 is on the phone. Please leave your message after the tone. When done, hang up or
Okay. All right. We will try it again. Is Linda Womack here tonight? We'll see if we can get her off. We're coming up on the end of the second hour. I keep
extension 50547 0015 is on the phone. Please leave your message after the tone. When done, hang up or press the pound key.
Okay, I'm finally back. Okay. All right, I pretty much know when to throw in the towel. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to end the show tonight, and we will hopefully try again tomorrow evening with better results. So until tomorrow night at 6, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly, truly great evening.